You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast at savage.love.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
So there's what I wanted to talk about at the top of this week's show. And then there's what I kind of gotta talk about at the top of this week's show. Here's what I wanted to talk about, and what I would have talked about exclusively at the top of this week's show if we lived in a country where a right once secured, like the right to control your own reproductive system, or the right to vote, or the right to marry, was actually secure. You know, if it was recognized as a right that, while perhaps long denied, now that it has been secured, cannot be yanked away. If that was the country we lived in, then I could dedicate the entirety of the opening of this week's installment of my Dirty Little Sex Advice podcast to the bomb squad that was called into a hospital in Gloucestershire in the UK after a man walked in with a bomb, or waddled in with a bomb, because this bomb wasn't strapped to this man's chest. This bomb was in his butt, and it wasn't your average bomb. It was a World War II mortar shell in his butt. How'd that happen? Well, the man claims he was clearing out something, a shed, a drawer, a kitchen cabinet, the stories don't say what, when he found this mortar shell during the clearing out process. And that's an enormous anti-tank bomb used in World War II, mostly in Africa. And so he carefully set this mortar shell on the floor and then, very clumsily, fell on it, he says, causing it to lodge itself in his rectum. So how'd that happen? He didn't do it. Gravity did it. All the stories I could find about this described the man as a military enthusiast, which would seem to be putting it mildly. This happened. This man waddled into a hospital with a bomb in his ass a month after the publication of what was regarded at the time, a month ago, forgive me, as a bombshell report itself about the amount of money Britain's National Health Service spends every year removing quote-unquote foreign objects from British rectums. The BBC reported nearly 400 rectal foreign body removals are performed each year with an annual cost of £338,819, illustrating the effect this has on NHS resources. Conservative British politicians tried to distract voters in the UK from the ongoing disaster that is Brexit and corruption scandals that have been breaking out like mad recently by complaining about all those foreign objects having to be removed from all those British rectums at great cost to the British taxpayer. But as an earlier report pointed out when I stumbled over while making notes for the story I wanted to talk about at the top of this week's podcast, which would be this one, Britain's National Health Service spends £3 million a year removing foreign items from ears and noses, which makes rectums seem like a steal. Anyway, that would have been a fun topic to open the show with. This, you know, sex advice podcast where we like to keep the opening fun. We don't get to do a World War II anti-tank mortar bomb inserted in someone's butt level of fun and light to open the show every week, but wouldn't it be nice? Okay, now here's what I gotta talk about at the top of this week's show. The U.S. Supreme Court, 9 justices, the majority of them appointed by presidents who lost the popular vote, 3 by Trump, 2 by George W. Bush, the Supreme Court, most likely going to strike down Roe v. Wade, the 1973 decision that recognized that women have a constitutional right to abortion. Abortion won't be banned nationally if Roe is struck down. This isn't the passage of the Human Life Amendment that Republicans were pushing in the 1980s. But striking down Roe will allow states to regulate abortion even more strictly than it's already regulated, and roughly half of the U.S. states are going to ban abortion the instant Roe is overturned. There are laws in place that go into effect the instant Roe is overturned in half the United States. Now, it goes without saying, but I'm going to say it anyway, that wealthy women, the wives and daughters and mistresses of male Republican politicians, for example, they're still going to be able to get abortions. they will fly to New York or Chicago to go shopping for a weekend and get an abortion. But poor women, women of color, women who've been raped, victims of incest, trans men who are likelier to be living below the poverty line than cis women are going to be forced to give birth against their wills. Many of the laws about to snap into place have no exception for rape or incest. So a 12-year-old girl in Texas whose father raped her will be forced to give birth. A quick aside, if I may, to gay men out there who don't think this is about us. For gay men who are, for reasons I don't understand, pro-forced birth or pro-life. Roe, that decision in 1973, was grounded in the recognition of a right to privacy, which is not a phrase that appears anywhere in the U.S. Constitution. It's a right that has been read into the U.S. Constitution again and again over the last 7 or 8 decades. The right to privacy, previous courts ruled, can be discerned in the Bill of Rights. That's what's being rolled back here, the right to privacy, to a zone of privacy, to bodily autonomy. And it's not just Roe that relies on this recognition of a right to privacy inferred or implied in the Bill of Rights in the U.S. Constitution. Griswold versus Connecticut, which found that states could not ban contraception, right to privacy. Lawrence v. Texas, which declared sodomy laws unconstitutional. Those were laws banning gay sex and non-procreative straight sex as well, but mostly gay sex, right to privacy. Obergefell, the Supreme Court decision that legalized same-sex marriage in the United States, right to privacy. So, my fellow gay guys, if you enjoy not being arrested for having sex with your boyfriend in your own apartment, if you like being married or the possibility of one day being married, overturning Roe is a threat to you too. This is the same court, pretty much a couple of new, more conservative additions, pretty much the same court that gutted the Voting Rights Act. So anti-choice, anti-woman, anti-gay, anti-black, anti-anyone but white people voting, women, queer people, people of color, people who'd like to vote or use contraception, we have a common enemy here. They're coming for all of us. We are all in this together. And by this, I mean the rights crosshairs. In it together. So what can you do? What can we all do? We can fight back. But right now, since we all can't get in a time machine and go convince our friends to vote in 2000 and 2016, like judicial appointments mattered, right now, we can stock up. Go to shareabortionpill.info, go to plancpills.com, send those websites to your friends, send your friends to those websites. They can overturn Roe, but you know what they can't do? They can't return us to the days of back alley abortions or coat hangers. We have abortion pills now, and they're safe, and they're effective, and they can be ordered online and self-administered. There's tons more information at both those websites, shareabortionpill.info and plancpills.com. If you live in a red state, you're going to want to get your hands on some of those pills and do it now. For you, if you ever need them, or for a friend or a sibling or a child. And they can be safely stored and used for up to 5 years. I'm going to get my hands on some, and I'm going to encourage everyone out there to do the same. Even if you live in a blue state, I'm going to get my hands on some. I'm gay. I probably won't ever need them myself or for a sex partner of mine, but I'm going to get my hands on some. Because I have nieces and nephews who are growing up in red states. And if one of them ever needs an abortion, one or both of their gay uncles are going to be on a plane with those pills in our carry-on bags in 10 minutes. And there's not a damn thing the Supreme Court can do about it. Okay, coming up on today's show, tons of your Q's, lots of my A's, and on the Magnum edition of the Savage Lovecast, the Magnum Savage Lovecast, more calls, more guests, no ads. Dr. Ashley Winter comes back on the show to talk about Peyronie's disease, a disease of the dick, what it is, and what can be done about it. Also coming up, the holidays give the gift of, well, me, I guess. You can grab your loved one's tickets to Hump 2021 at humpfilmfest.com, or you can gift someone a Magnum subscription to the Savage Lovecast at savage.love, or you can order a copy of my new book, Savage Love from A to Z, wherever books are sold. Oh, and abortion pills also make great stocking stuffers. Once again, go to shareabortionpill.info or plancpills.com for more info on getting yours. And now let's get to the show. This episode is brought to you by Helix Sleep, the best mattress for your individualized comfort. Right now, my listeners get up to $200 off all mattress orders at helixsleep.com/savage.
Dame Products is a woman-founded company that makes toys for sex. Developed and tested by real people, their innovative, doctor-approved products for pleasure are designed to enhance and enrich all kinds of sex. Visit dameproducts.com/savage to see what they can bring to your bedroom or wherever, you know, you do it.
Support for today's show, support we are very grateful for, comes from Stamps.com. With Stamps.com, you can access all the amazing services of the post office right from your desk in your own home, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Just click, print, mail, and you are done. It could not be easier. And right now, use Savage for this special offer. Includes up to $55 worth of free postage, a digital scale, and a four-week trial. Do not wait. Go to stamps.com, and before you do anything else, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Savage. That's stamps.com. Enter S-A-V-A-G-E.
Hi, Dan, Nancy, and the tech-savvy at-risk youth. I am a late 20s caller from New York City, and I'm calling with a question about having a partner who is in the kink community. So my boyfriend is really great. We've been dating for a few months, and he was very upfront with me about his interest in kink. And I had only ever had vanilla sex before, but I, from being a Magnum subscriber, I knew to be GGG would be better for both of us. And I found out I'm kind of into it too. So we've been having a lot of fun with me topping him, using some restraints, some light, you know, little hair pulling and things like that, some light degradation. It's all been fun. But I know that he's very much more vested in the community than me, so he gets invited to a lot of kink events. And I told him I'm totally fine with him going to those alone because I am not ready. I'm not there yet, but I understand this is just his special interest, just like my special interest is watching The Real Housewives of Salt Lake City. So recently he did go to one of those parties and he told me about it afterwards, had a great time, you know, getting hit with a flogger, tied up, all that fun stuff. And he told me he was playing with this woman who he had known for a while. They're kind of like good acquaintances. It's not really sexual, but I guess it kind of, I don't even really know, but he was mentioning to me, he was like, oh yeah, no, it was great. I haven't seen her in a while. Also, she wants me to come over and clean her house because it's something called service subbing, I think. And for some reason, that kind of made me bristle because I was like, well, I'm at your apartment a lot. Your house isn't that clean. And you would kind of do that for somebody else before, you know, taking care of your own self and your space. And I mean, he's an adult and he can do whatever he wants. And if this is something that brings him like a joy or satisfaction or really gets him off, I think that's great. I just don't know why I'm having kind of this bitchy reaction. Like, I don't know if I'm jealous. I don't know if I just don't understand. And it's very possible that I don't. I really want to be in a place where we can be sexually open and also, you know, just allow each other to explore what they want to do. But for something like that, when maybe, you know, it might be hard for me to see him serving someone else in a way that feels kind of sexual when he might not do it for himself or you know, me for that matter. I'm sure he would if I asked, but I just want to know, are these feelings of maybe jealousy or questions normal when you're just learning about kink and you're dating someone who's much more into it? And does anyone have any tips on how to kind of get through that and support your partner in something that they want to do?
First thing I want to say is you're doing great. You met a kinky guy or a guy who it turns out is kinkier than you are. You've discovered a few kinks of your own dating him, and he enjoys big kink events and you don't. And rather than forcing him to choose between these big kink events where he's allowed to express a part of his sexuality that's very important to him, but choose between those events and you, you've allowed him to attend those events and you're not shaming him. It's not a DADT situation where you can attend the events as long as he doesn't tell you about them. You want to hear about them. And yeah, you're doing great at this GGG stuff. So he shares this one thing with you and you have this odd, unexpected reaction that feels like jealousy and you want to know what to do about it. And I think the right thing to do here is to kind of laugh about it with him, to point out I don't think it's an absurdity necessarily, but to point out the fact that he's going to go clean this woman's house when he doesn't really keep his own house clean. And since you're sharing that space with him, at least some of the time now, keeping that space clean is something that he could do not just for himself, but could do for you. Now, cleaning her house probably sounds like more fun to him than cleaning his own might, because at least right now, cleaning her house probably involves a collar and a butt plug and maybe an orgasm or a spanking as a reward if he does a good job or a poor job or both. Maybe he gets an orgasm and a spanking if he does a good job, and maybe just gets a spanking if he does a bad job, and maybe a ruined orgasm. You explore DS stuff together, so it seems like an easy fix for you to propose a little bit of this service subbing for you. You ordering him to clean your apartment, since you know that he enjoys being ordered to clean a space, but also before you come over to his apartment, for him to clean it top to bottom as a show of respect for you and submission to you. So rather than regarding this woman as a rival or this woman, you know, resenting her for getting something out of your boyfriend that you're not getting, this kind of service, also this kind of consideration, you can point to the absurdity of the situation and then turn it around on him and be grateful to this woman because she raised the issue really by asking him to be her service sub. Now you're going to get a little bit of that service yourself. So maybe you're not going to run into her at a kink party because you don't go to them, but you might want to send her a thank you note.
Hi, Dan and the Tech Savvy At-Risk Youth. Me and my friend Briny are here, and we were just playing with my dog's bone that you can probably hear him chewing, and it has a hole in it. Briny stuck her finger in it, and I told her that was really gay. And then we started talking about pegging. And why is pegging so conditionally called pegging? Like, why can't it just be called anal sex? When with lesbians, like, fucking someone with a dildo is sex. Like, if you're a gay man, it's sex, but it has a penis.
Is it only straight men?
Is it only for straight men?
Being fucked by women?
Yeah. Explain, please.
Yeah, pegging is sex. Pegging is a kind of sex. You know, you say gay guys, when they have anal sex, just say that they've had sex. Yeah, but gay guys talk about tops, they talk about bottoms, they talk about subtops, they talk about power bottoms, they talk about protected, bareback, DP. When you get down into the nitty-gritty, when you want people to understand what kind of sex you're having or that you are asking for, that you want to have, or that you had and you want to talk about with your friends, you got to say something a little more specific than we had sex. You know, straight people say we had sex, and straight people think that all straight people mean by that is PIV. So if a woman and a man just, you know, had a pegging session, she fucked his ass with a strap-on dildo, but that woman and man, all they tell you or all your friend tells you is they had sex, you're just going to assume PIV unless they give you more information, unless they have other words and phrases to describe the sex acts that they enjoy. And so, yeah, I absolutely agree with you. Pegging is just sex, but it helps to have lots of different names and phrases and terms for all the different kinds of sex two people can enjoy, or more people, 3, 4, 5, 20 people can enjoy. You can conjure up a mental image of a pegging conga line that goes on forever. Now, if you're really interested, you want a deeper dive on the history of pegging, how it came to be named that, pick up my new book, Savage Love from A to Z. P is for pegging. There's a whole chapter in Savage Love from A to Z on pegging. The reason we came up, me and my readers together, I didn't name it, my readers named it, was because I was getting a lot of letters in the early mid-90s about women fucking men in their asses, men's asses, with strap-on dildos, and a lot of questions from guys who were curious about having their asses fucked by women wearing strap-on dildos. And this was kind of a crossover from lesbian communities. In the 90s, these woman-owned, sex-positive, queer-positive, often owned by lesbians, sex toy stores started to open, and straight people wandered into them, and they saw the lesbians buying strap-on dildos to fuck each other, and they thought, hey, we could maybe give that a whirl. And because of the word count in my column, constantly having to repeat the phrase, I am a straight man, I'm interested in being fucked in the ass by a woman wearing a strap-on dildo, it ate up a lot of my word count. This is before the internet, where there's your word counts are infinite, just like that mental image of the conga line of an infinite number of women pegging an infinite number of men in their asses that goes on forever. You know, on the internet, your word count is infinite, but in print, it was 1,200 words a week. And constantly having to write about a woman fucking a man in the ass with a strap-on dildo was eating up a lot of my word count. And I challenged my readers to come up with a name for that specific thing that so many of my straight readers were writing to me about and chewing up my word count. And there were several suggestions, including Bob. There was a popular series of pornographic videos, instructional pornographic videos at the time called Bend Over Boyfriend, B-O-B, Bob videos. But a reader suggested pegging, peg, pegging, pegged, got pegged. And I let my readers vote on it, and they chose it, and it stuck. And I fully expect that one day it will be in the OED. But language is not a static thing. A lot of people now use pegging to refer to anybody fucking anybody in any orifice with a strap-on dildo. I support that broader definition of pegging, that broader use of pegging. But originally, and when most people use it now, they understand it to mean a woman fucking a man with a strap-on dildo. That is the original definition, and it's a helpful one. We need those words and phrases. We need to be able to say something more than just, I had sex, we had sex. Because knowing someone had sex, tells you a lot, doesn't tell you everything. Lots of you know that I am a Christmas guy. Terry also is the world's greatest gift getter and gift wrapper. It always looks like Santa Claus is throwing a moving sale at our house in December. But there are a few things that make me want to join the war against Christmas, and they are so-called sexy Santas, the song Jingle Bell Rock, and going to the post office. Thank baby Jesus. For Stamps.com. Stamps.com takes all the hassle and guesswork out of holiday shipping and saves you money. You can easily compare prices and delivery dates across major carriers and get huge discounts, up to 40% off USPS and 76% off UPS rates. If you run a business that does shipping, Stamps.com has your back all year long, but particularly around the holidays. Whether your sales come from Etsy, Shopify, eBay, or other sites, Stamps.com streamlines your shipping and keeps you and your customers happy. It integrates with all your sales channels across top marketplaces and automatically imports shipping info for each order. Just print the label, stick it on, and schedule a pickup or drop it off yourself. No need to rush around in holiday traffic. With Stamps.com's built-in tracking tools and delivery notifications, you can avoid those dreaded where's my package messages from stressed out customers. Deliver more smiles this holiday season and start shipping and start saving with Stamps.com today. There's no risk. And with my promo code SAVAGE, you get a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus free shipping credits and a digital shipping scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. You'll be up and running in minutes. Just go to stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in SAVAGE. That's stamps.com, promo code SAVAGE. Let them know the Lovecast sent you. Stamps.com, easy e-commerce shipping for less, a lot less.
Hey, Dan. I have a question. At home, I have one of those toilet seat bidets that you can attach to your toilet. And I've discovered that if I position just right, the water can go up inside my butt and I can hold it in there for a minute and, you know, flush it out. And I've been doing it a lot, and I'm kind of wondering if this is bad for me or not. I'm not really even into butt stuff. I just like the idea of a clean butt, and I don't know if doing this on the daily is a bad idea or not. And also, this might be helpful to some people out there wanting to prep for butt stuff.
Wow, that's one skilled butthole you have there. You're in control of it. You can open up and relax a little bit enough that that stream of water from what I hope is your tushy bidet goes into your rectum, fills up your rectum, and then you can clamp down. You can close your butthole off, turn off your tushy bidet, hold the water, and then release it. Congratulations. You are douching, anal douching, unnecessarily since you're not into butt stuff, but you will have a squeaky clean butt if you continue to douche in that manner. So long as you're not pushing water way, way up, so long as you're not giving yourself really deep, high, powerful power washing enemas, which can, if you do that on the daily, interfere with your own ability, your body's ability to have bowel movements naturally. You know, sometimes a deep enema is a way to treat constipation, but constant deep enemas can induce constipation. Kind of a paradox, but you're not doing that. You're just giving yourself, your rectum, your rectal cavity, the one just inside your sphincters, a little bit of a flush. Not going to hurt yourself, not going to do yourself any damage. And if you suddenly do decide to get into butt stuff on impulse, your butt will be ready to go.
This episode of the Lovecast is sponsored by Dame Products, makers of expertly designed toys for those blessed with a vulva. Dame is a woman-founded company making the next generation of vulva-tested, vulva-approved toys for sex. Started by a sex educator and an engineering whiz, Dame develops their products based on research and feedback from real humans, meaning people like you. They're making better sexual experiences and more pleasure available to all. Dame's easy-to-use toys and accessories are made with body-safe materials and smart design principles, and they've earned glowing praise from the New York Times, the Today Show, and many more. Whether you're looking to shake things up with your partner or upgrade your self-care routine, they've got something for every nightstand. And everybody knows that sex toys make the best damn gifts imaginable, you know, for the right person. Dame offers 3-year warranties and hassle-free returns within 60 days, so your satisfaction is guaranteed. Go to dameproducts.com/savage today for $10 off your order with Dame. That's dameproducts.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. I am a 35-year-old straight female. I am single. So last Friday night, I had a little bit of wine with my roommate, and I opened LinkedIn, which I never use, and I noticed that this instructor of mine from a course I took a few years ago had added me. We don't have, any social connections or work connections other than him having been my instructor. And I am mortified to say that in my little tipsy state, I wrote him a very formal, because it was LinkedIn, so I figured you couldn't just like slide into the DMs with something romantic. So instead, drunk me thought that it would be a good idea to write him a message saying that I was working on an anthropological project about cultures in the greater Boston area. It had to do a little bit with what he had been my instructor in. This isn't true. I'm not working on an anthropological project like that. There is no organization that has tasked me with this. But he responded back like pretty much immediately with like a lot of excitement that he was so excited to help me with my project. And so it's really nice that he responded back, but now I just don't know what to do. If I want to meet up with him, do I need to start a project like that? Or do I just ghost him? Cause then that's really weird. Cause it was a very formal, I was actually impressed with how well written it was considering that I was so tipsy, but yeah, I don't know what to do. Do I just ghost him? Do I write back and say, I'm so sorry, I'm a psychotic and wrote you this gigantic lie just to get your attention, or I don't know what to do.
Do you think there's any chance he added you on LinkedIn because he was into you?
I mean, I think that was my initial thought. I was excited when I saw that he had added me. It had been like a year since I had been in the class. So I think I wanted to like ride that momentum when I saw that he added me.
Yeah, not the momentum you wanted to ride, .. Excuse me. Nudge, nudge. Your only choices here are to ghost or to come clean, because, you know, if you make up a project to meet with him, if you keep, you know, advancing the lie that you told him, eventually he's going to find out. And you know, it could be a meet cute story that I told a lie to get your attention. Ha ha ha. Now that I've got it, like maybe I can drop this ruse. But if you draw that out for 3 months or 6 months, and then he finds out, he's going to feel manipulated and possibly humiliated. And that's going to fuck up what could be a very nice relationship. I mean, eventually he's going to know the truth. Right?
That's a good point. I mean, I guess in my head, I was thinking maybe I could do this project, you know, just, you know, it's something I'm interested in, I guess. Yeah, I don't know. I just don't want to seem like totally unhinged.
And I think you say that.
Because it was quite an involved proposal.
You like, say that. Look, this is going to make me sound completely unhinged. It's just like acknowledging awkwardness. Like, this is awkward, makes it less awkward. If someone says, you know what, this is going to make me seem completely unhinged, at least you then know that they have the self-awareness to realize that it makes them seem unhinged, which makes them paradoxically seem a little less unhinged than they might otherwise.
Okay. And well, that's a good point.
And if it's disqualifying, you know, if you like spun this bullshit project out in the hopes of getting his attention and he's offended by that, okay, well then it'll never work out anyway.
Yeah, that's very true, I guess. I'm not, you know, losing anything, I guess, by coming clean. And I really just don't have the bandwidth to take on an anthropological project. That's not on my plate.
And, you know, you can also, you know, if I was going to game out the language with you, if I was your bestie and we were sitting there writing the email together, you could, in addition to saying, this is going to make me seem unhinged, and now I'm really embarrassed, and I'd had a glass of wine, slip in there somewhere. I hope you can see the compliment in here. Like, I took a lot away from your class. Obviously, I learned a lot. If I was able to, like, just off the cuff think of a research project that might attract your attention, that's because of you. And, yeah, if you can forgive me and see past this, like, moment's insanity induced by a good Chablis, I'd love to go out on a date with you. And maybe that's why he added you on LinkedIn. LinkedIn isn't typically a site where people troll for pussy, but some people do use it that way. Some people use everything that way. And maybe he was into you. That's why he looked you up.
Well, I love that. All right. Well, I'll give it a shot, Dan. Thank you.
And then give us a call back and let us know how it went.
Okay, perfect. Thanks so much.
Bye. Do you know where the best place to be is? On my Helix mattress. And no, you are not invited, but you can get your own Helix mattress, and then you will also be in the best place. Helix Sleep has a quiz that takes just 2 minutes to complete and matches your body type and sleep preferences to the perfect mattress for you. With Helix, you're getting a mattress that you know will be perfect for the way you sleep. They have several different mattress models to choose from. They have soft, medium, and firm mattresses. Mattresses great for cooling you down if, like me, you sleep hot. Mattresses great for spinal alignment to prevent morning aches and pains. And even a Helix Plus mattress for plus-sized sleepers. Terry and I took the Helix quiz, and we were matched with the Midnight Luxe mattress because we wanted something with medium firmness, and we both tend to move around a lot at night when we sleep. We love it. Our Helix mattress that we got for us was so comfortable. We got a Helix mattress for the guest room too, and our Helix mattresses can handle everything we throw at them. So if you're looking for a mattress, you take the quiz, you order the mattress that you're matched to, and the mattress comes right to your door shipped for free. You don't ever need to go to a mattress store again. Just go to helixsleep.com/savage, take their 2-minute sleep quiz, and they'll match you to a customized mattress that will give you the best sleep of your life. Then it arrives at your door, shipped for free, and your life changes for the better. Helix Sleep has a 10-year warranty, and you get to try out your new mattress for 100 nights risk-free. We'll even pick it up if you don't love it, but you're going to love it. Helix even has financing options and flexible payment plans, so a great night's sleep is never far away. Helix is also offering up to $200 off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for our listeners at helixsleep.com/savage. Let them know the Lovecast sent you. Go to helixsleep.com/savage.
Hey, Dan, a straight woman in the Bay Area. What's your opinion on forgiving bad early sexual experiences with a partner? I recently got out of a relationship of like a year and a quarter with someone who I had a really rocky start to with sexually. First time we had sex, he like just stuck his dick in me with no foreplay, like just was really bad. I talked to him the next day about it, basically said like that was unacceptable. I just, that can't happen again. And he was understanding and open to what I had to say. And, you know, we improved it and, you know, got it to a much, much, much better place with a lot of work. But that negative first impression and the fact that this particular person told me he had slept with hundreds of women before me, and that initial first impression of like why he chose to show up that way sexually for me at the first time, and also like, am I the first person to have said anything about this? Like, did he do this with hundreds of women, and like I'm the first person to say that that wasn't okay? And those kind of thoughts, just I couldn't get over them, even though the actual sex we were having got so much better and he like learned what I was talking about and like why that was just not good sex. And I just ultimately like couldn't get over that negative impression of him and what that meant about who he was. And yeah, I just couldn't see myself with him, I think, because of that really bad first impression, even though it improved a lot. So my question is, are there just some things that aren't forgivable early in a sexual relationship? Is this kind of a me issue? You know, this might be just my own personal boundary that my partner has to show up with a certain amount of sexual skill. I don't know. What do you think? Would love to hear your thoughts.
Of course, there are things that someone might do during a first sexual encounter that are unforgivable. And that's a subjective standard. You know, people engage in acts of intimate violence in first sexual encounters, or people young, experienced, stupid, or experienced, selfish, malicious, bust out moves that any idiot would know require some pre-negotiation and consent, like choking, which too many people are just going for during sex because they've seen so much of it in pornography, seen it represented as something that everybody enjoys and you just sort of do. And a lot of people do enjoy it. And so it could be the case that some people are busting that move and getting a positive reception and then moving on to the next partner who is traumatized by that move and cannot forgive it and should not be expected to forgive it and does not have to forgive it. Okay, as for your situation, as for this guy that you just got out of this relationship, I guess I have to assume that on some level you were able to forgive him. You were willing to work with him on improving his sexual skills over the last year. And now that the relationship is over, I imagine that you're seeing that first encounter through the prism of the end of the relationship. And perhaps you're reassessing your decision to stay with him in light of how terrible that first sexual encounter was. And I think that you did forgive him, and perhaps now you regret forgiving him because you, maybe if the relationship ended and you were happy about how it ended or how it played out or how he treated you in other ways, you now realize that what you invested in him was a waste and you should have cut him off immediately. You should have dumped him immediately. You should have gotten up and left immediately after he threw his dick in you without any foreplay or preparation, stuck his dick in you. Yeah, that is lousy sex. And this guy says he slept with hundreds of women. Huh? Were you the first one to say something? Maybe. And it took you until the next day to say something. I've been there. I've been flat on my back with a guy about to penetrate me who thinks he can just go for it. I squirm away in those moments. I am a man. I was socialized differently. I have been there. I've been exactly where you were. And the words that come out of my mouth at that moment are like, hey, what do you fucking think you're doing? No, excuse me, just a moment, please. You were socialized as a woman to defer to men, not to say no to men, to prioritize men's feelings over your own. And you endured it. And then you worked up the nerve the next day to say something. It's plausible. It stands to reason. There are lots of women out there he did the exact same thing to who never said a word to him about it. Maybe they never saw him again, or maybe they continued to date him and continued to allow him to do this. But yeah, I don't think your reaction in the moment as it was happening is an outlier. I think a lot of women would have reacted the way that you did. There was something about him where you thought you wanted to see him again, but you certainly didn't want to endure that kind of terrible, lousy, awful sex again. And so you decided to speak up, to say something. And maybe you've done a favor to all the women he's going to date after you. Or maybe he's a selfish asshole, knew he couldn't get away with that with you anymore, and so stopped, paid attention to what you were telling him he needed to do if he wanted to continue to have sex with you. But now that you're out of his life, perhaps he's going to revert to form and try this on other women. Hopefully not. Hopefully you broke him of this. Hopefully you left him in better shape than you found him. He can't say the same about you, because that first experience, now in the wake of the end of the relationship, it looms larger. And you obviously now feel conflicted about it in a way that maybe 6 months ago, when you were still investing in this guy, you didn't feel so conflicted about it. So I think what you need to do going forward is make up your own mind about what is and isn't forgivable. I would encourage you, if you're ever in a situation again where a guy is beginning to do something like just throw his dick in you, suddenly stick it in you, penetrate you without any foreplay or preparation, that you will remember waiting a whole day to say something to that asshole who did that to you before. And you will say something before that dick is in you about what that guy is trying to do, attempting to do, about to do, and come to your own rescue at that moment. Defeat your socialization as a woman at that moment. And then get the fuck out of there and don't see that guy again. The guy in the future, the hypothetical guy who tries to do the same thing this guy did. Because you now know that if you forgive that and make an investment and work on that guy who tries that with you in the future, some other guy, and the relationship comes to shit, you're going to regret it and feel conflicted about it and probably call me again.
Hello, Dan, Nancy, and the tech-savvy at-risk youth. I am a mid-20s cishet woman in the Bay Area. I am getting my master's degree, but we are not in person. It is still online. And so I am wondering if you had any advice on how to flirt with a classmate that I think is really, really cute. Today, he was a little bit dressed up. Maybe he had a job interview or something. And I was just sitting at home steaming. Just adorable. But I have no idea how to approach him. Like, how am I supposed to flirt with someone on Slack? That seems weird. And we do live in the same town, so we could ostensibly get together for coffee or something, but I just feel so strange about it. And is it harassment to flirt with a classmate? And it sounds like a bad idea either way, although we don't have any classes together next semester, so it does seem a little bit low risk in that regard. Anyway, if you have advice on how to approach a classmate, coworker, someone in that genre without it blowing up in your face or making anyone feel uncomfortable, I would love to hear it.
With apologies to Daniel Patrick Moynihan, I am against defining sexual harassment down like this. Moynihan was the U.S. Senator from New York from 1977 to 2001, just tossing out a decades-old political reference to complement all the decades-old pop culture references that I'm constantly tossing out that have endeared me to Gen Z listeners. Anyway, what you describe doing, asking a classmate out on a date, expressing sexual and or romantic interest in your classmate to your classmate, That's not sexual harassment. You have no power over your classmate. You're not this person's professor. You're not this person's employer. You are equals. So how do you ask them out? You ask them out. You say, hey, I notice we live in the same town. We're taking the same class right now. Would you like to grab coffee sometime or a drink? That's not sexual harassment. That's the expression of interest. Asking someone that you have no institutional coercive power over out on a date is not sexual harassment. Continuing to ask that person out on dates after that person has said no, if that person says no, and they might say yes, well, that would be sexual harassment. Look, we don't want to live in a world where asking someone out is defined as sexual harassment. You know, we've defined sexual harassment down to the point where just asking someone out is sexual harassment. Because then we're going to live in a world where the only people who ever hit on us or ask us out are people who are okay with sexually harassing other people. The good and kind and decent and thoughtful people will remove themselves from the dating pool. They'll never ask anybody out. It'll only be the people who don't care that'll ask people out. Look, I want to be clear. It is okay to express interest in someone, to ask someone out on a date. I think it's best to ask someone if they'd like to get coffee or a drink sometime. Everyone knows what that means, and it gives a person an out to say they're not, you know, they don't have time or whatever. They can make an excuse and say no if they're not interested in you in the same way or open to exploring the possibility that some interest will develop over coffee. And if they are, they'll say yes. But if they're not, they'll say no. And you know what? Sometimes being asked out is awkward, makes us uncomfortable. Being put in the position of having to reject someone, that can make us uncomfortable. Realizing someone we didn't think of with sexual or romantic interest was looking at us in that Zoom class, thinking of us with sexual or romantic interest, that can make us momentarily uncomfortable. But what's the alternative? To live in a world where no one ever asks anyone else out for fear of causing momentary discomfort or awkwardness, also known as a world where no good, kind, thoughtful, decent people ever get laid, no one who isn't an asshole? Yeah, I don't want to live in that world, and I don't think you want to live in that world either. This doesn't mean that I think that men should ask women out on the street or on the bus or on the subway and that it isn't shitty behavior if they take no for an answer. Approaching a stranger, someone you have no reason to interact with in a public setting, that's kind of asshole behavior. And men should know that women are constantly approached. Just ask them out for coffee and then take no for an answer. You're not technically guilty, maybe, of sexual harassment in the aggregate. Being one of the 14 guys who did that day feels like harassment, perceived as harassment by that individual woman. But asking a classmate out, someone you have interacted with, asking a fellow employee out, not someone you manage, to go get coffee sometime, that is not sexual harassment. And it worries me that people out there now are starting to believe that any expression, however respectful, of sexual or romantic interest in someone else, if it's unwelcome, constitutes harassment. It does not. Refusing to take no for an answer, asking again and again and again, that constitutes harassment. So, caller, ask this cute, hot, Natalie dressed the last time you saw him on that Slack channel classmate to meet up sometime for coffee or a drink. And if he says no, it'll be awkward for him to say no. It'll be awkward for you to hear no. It'll be awkward and uncomfortable the next time you see each other in class. But he might say yes. And then, yay, two kind and decent people, presumably. Actually, I don't know anything about this guy or you really, but let's extend to both of you the benefit of the doubt. Two kind and decent people will have met up at least for coffee and maybe something more. All right, before we get to listener response calls this week, let's read some listener tweets. JT Justman tweets regarding episode 788's opening rant. Let's not fat shame anyone, even fundamentalist wannabe fascists, please. That opening reeked of not to be racist, but ... Hashtag Savage Lovecast. I hope I was clear in that rant that bodies come in all different shapes and sizes, and hot comes in all different shapes and sizes. But the wannabe fascist I was talking about Well, he was judging trans people by the same conventional standards of beauty that he himself falls far short of through no fault of his own. I wasn't trying to fat shame. I was just pointing out the hypocrisy. I tried to qualify that and make that clear, but if I fell short and anyone out there listening felt fat shamed, I apologize. Naomi Kritzer tweets, "The call from the woman who had a wonderful one-night stand with a neighbor who died the next day reminds me of the Sarah Dessen book, Once and For All. Your listener might find it a worthwhile and validating read. The protagonist also struggles to explain to the people around her why she's grieving so deeply for someone she knew in person for a single night. It's a YA novel and a quick read that might make your listener feel seen, Dan." And finally, Aaron Marks tweets, "For the refractory period guilty guy, I sensed more than just the physiological ick recoil. Could there be a component of discomfort with being exposed and vulnerable emotionally during sex, even in a great relationship with a loving partner?" I guess that could be also a possibility. All right. Thanks to everyone out there who posted to social media about the Savage Lovecast this week. Particularly big thanks to everyone who posted about the Savage Lovecast being their top podcast in their Spotify Wrapped roundups. Thank you, Kara and Coach Darlene and Robert and James and everyone else. And thank you also to Samid for gifting a Savage Lovecast Magnum subscription to your buddy Anton. All right. Now, listener response calls.
Hello, response call for the person who is frustrated with their family members constantly misgendering them. I'm 35 years old. I have a lot of loved ones around me who are non-binary. And as much as I acknowledge and see them as non-binary, I definitely slip up sometimes. I really hate that I do. It's just after being used to using these very specific terms for so long, I feel like my brain just kind of glitches out once in a while. So it's certainly something that I have to put a lot of conscious effort into, and that just slips by me once in a while. So I, again, I hate that it does. I honestly kind of feel like it's like training a dog where there's just this importance in repetitive actions in order to get things to stick. I am much better than I was initially. And so just, it can take time for some people, especially older generations that spent so much time without having ever even heard these concepts before. So I would say the family members who sometimes get it right, just a gentle correcting, which I really appreciate when people do for me. And for the family members who never will refer to you by your correct pronouns, I would say those are the ones that you need to have a tough conversation with about respecting your preferred pronouns and your gender identity. And I know it's frustrating to have to correct people. I know that's not or shouldn't be your responsibility. But if it is something that is important to you, then just having a little bit of patience for those people that really want to get it right and just slip up sometimes.
Hey, Dan, I'm calling in response to episode 788 to the caller who is in a long distance engagement and trying to figure out how to open up his relationship. I agreed with everything you said, but I thought that there was one thing that was important that was sort of left unmentioned, which is, you know, please do not marry this guy until you guys have navigated this and ironed out some of the rules. It sounds like you're young, maybe even 22 years old. You don't live near each other, and you haven't even agreed upon the basic structure of what your relationship looks like. On top of that, whether you lied to him or cheated or whatever it was that happened with the hookup app, it sounds like you guys have a lot to work through. And so I hope that you take some time to do that before you decide to bring the government into your relationship.
Hey, Dan, to the woman who had that one great night with the dude before he died. I'm a guy who likes to get stoned. I like grunge music. I like to fuck. I'm afraid of death. I got health problems. You feel however you feel, but there is no better way to spend a last night on Earth than the way that man spent his last night on Earth.
And we're going to leave it there. Got a question for next week's show or a comment about the advice I gave on this week's show? The best way to get us your questions and your comments is to use the voice memo app on your phone to record your question or your comment and then email it to us at voicemail@savagelovecast.com. You can also call us at 206-302-2064. We prefer the voice memos, better sound quality, but we love your calls, however you choose to get them to us. The new year is coming up, and so is the new installment, the next installment of Hump, the best dirty little film festival in Texas and every place else. Tickets are now on sale for the opening of the Hump 2022 Festival, which kicks off in January in Seattle, Portland, San Francisco, and Olympia. Those premiere showings of the Festival of Hump are really, really fun. So if you can get to any of those cities, please do come and join us. And audiences in Seattle, Portland, San Francisco, and Olympia get to vote on the festival winners. And I, in person, will be hosting many of the opening shows live and in person and triple vaxxed. Go to humpfilmfest.com right now for tickets. Follow me on Twitter at FakeDanSavage. Follow Dr. Ashley Winter on Twitter at Ashley G. Winter. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the Tech Savvy at Risk Youth and Nancy. We'll all be back at you next week for an installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thank you for downloading.